You know, we love any excuse to watch great reality TV. So, with the weather heating up, while chartering a luxury yacht might be a little out of reach, we can still get our fix by binge watching all seasons and spin-offs of Below Deck available on Hayu.
The first all-reality subscription service of its kind, Hayu gives you access to every episode and every season of a wide range of captivating reality TV franchises. Plus, you can watch brand new episodes available the same day they air in the U.S. without ads. It's pretty awesome.
And if you're looking for a new series to dive into, Below Deck is the perfect choice. Tune in for a fresh yachty drama on brand new episodes of Below Deck Mediterranean, airing now. And once you're hooked, revisit classic seasons of all the franchises, including Below Deck Sailing Yacht, Adventure, and Down Under, all available on Hayu.
You know that we've watched every single episode of Below Deck. We have not only watched them, we've talked about them endlessly. We obsess over them.
Below Deck is so good, and it is such an amazing source of petty drama. If you're not watching it, you're really missing out.
Slide into summer with Below Deck. New episodes airing now.
Watch all seasons and spin-offs of Below Deck on Hayu. That's HAYU.com.
She was a romance mystery writer.
They gloated on the fact that she writes stories like this.
There are murders in all of the books.
From Wondery, the makers of Ghost Story and Theta, this is a story about a murder that rocked my little community. Binge all episodes of Happily Never After ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
Once upon a beat,
join me,
DJ Fuse,
and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, for a weekly jam-packed party as we remix and reimagine classic stories for the kids in your life today. Yeah. Once Upon a Beat is a new kids and family podcast from Wondery and Tinkercast, where hip-hop and fables meet. Listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
Once Upon a Beat.
Hello and welcome to Watch What Crappens, a podcast about all that crap on Bravo that we just love to talk about. I'm Ben Mandelker, and joining me, as usual, today, Mr. Ronnie Karam. Hi, Ronnie. How are you doing?
Hi.
Hi. Are you ready for the conclusion of the Summer House reunion? I thought it was going to be a three-parter for sure, so I was surprised.
I did too.
It was over.
I felt like I won something at the end, and it's not that I want Summer House to be over. I love Summer House, but, you know, it's just, I was taking notes on it, and it just felt like, oh my God, school's out? So it's like they tell you school's out a week early, you know? It was very exciting.
I guess we should have known, since the first episode was supersized. A lot of times if the first episode is supersized, it usually means, I think, that's only going to be a two-parter. But for some reason, I didn't allow myself the dream of it being only a two-parter. And so when it was, I was like, wow. Although I will say that I felt like Kyle got off super easy on this.
He sure did. They just took another chance to all shit on Lindsay, which I get it. Lindsay's crazy. I get it. I'm not saying she's not, but really, you guys are just going to all let all the guys get away with everything except for Lindsay and just jump on. Everything is Lindsay's fault. Every single thing that's ever happened is fucking Lindsay's fault.
I thought it was wild, you know, and, you know, I mean, how many times do I have to repeat myself? Not to you, but to, like, the cosmos. Which is that, like, what Lindsay said, Cocaine Carl, was, like, horrific. And when Sierra says later on that that's, like, a relationship-ending thing to say, I completely agree. But that being said, Carl does not get off scot-free. They really, like, even Andy, they were all coming for Lindsay in a way where I was like, no. There were two people at fault here, okay? We saw what Lindsay, you know, where she was really at fault, but Carl was very much at fault for so much of what happened. And Lindsay was fully justified in being totally exasperated with this guy. And for them to be like, oh, what's wrong with that? Like, oh, Carl's always falling on a sword. He's always falling on a sword. Is he?
He is not. No, he's not. He's so manipulative. And I love that she can call it out, but they've got her to the point now where they just are openly laughing at her, especially the girls. I will say, yeah, especially Paige really and Sierra mean. Sitting over there openly, like pointing and laughing. You know what, Paige? You're constantly fucking telling Craig that his ideas are stupid. First of all, why does Paige get off? Like, she's never told Craig his ideas are stupid. We love it when Paige does it. We think it's hilarious when Paige does it, but Lindsay doesn't have that charm. And so Paige then, when it's not her turn to openly humiliate her boyfriend, it's like hilarious that someone would even think that that's okay. And, you know, she's such an asshole. She really is such an asshole half the time. And I've really liked her most of this season, but she really opens that asshole flower when she comes to the reunions. I don't like it. And then Sierra there is like a whole victim this whole time. Like, she's so crying and she's so hurt by this guy. And then she's openly mocking somebody else. And while I'm at it, just get ready to hate my ass anyway, everybody out there, because I know I'm going to take a lot of shit for this. Lindsay wasn't saying Cocaine Carl like it was hilarious. Like, oh, here comes Cocaine Carl. Does that make it right for her to bring it up on camera? No, absolutely not. But when we get to the part where Carl's like, oh, yeah, you know, bringing stuff up like that after someone's worked so hard, that could jeopardize their sobriety. No, you are in charge of your own sobriety. And I can't believe I'm even hearing talk like that from a sober person. Being sober is so hard. You're not allowed to let other people affect your sobriety like that, and other people's words affect it. And I'm sorry I'm already on a soapbox, but this whole thing about turning your addiction into suddenly nobody else gets to say anything ever or have any, it's a point now where I'm going crazy. We don't get to do that as addicts. We just don't get to do it. And I don't know when the rules changed, but sorry. And yes, Lindsay was still wrong for saying Cocaine Carl, but they're just taking it and they're making it like, you said Cocaine Carl. No, she said, you reminded me like you were treating me like you were raging at me like you used to when you were on cocaine. Sorry.
Ladies and gentlemen, Cocaine Ronnie has spoken.
Pretty much. That's how I feel right now. I don't even know why I'm that angry right now, but I'll calm it down for the rest of the recap. But, you know, just a general thing. Like, I don't understand how this all turned around into, like, shitting on one person.
I think that one thing that you said, which we have, by the way, said several times over the season, is that, like, I think that Lindsay's allowed to have some PTSD from when Carl was not sober. I think that's totally allowed. And that I agree, it's cutting for her to say it. I don't think she should have said that. I think it was really mean of her to say it.
I agree.
But I can also imagine a world where she has been brought to that place. And I just think it's not as cut and dry as it appears on TV. And
I agree with you. And
I think it's actually a pretty nuanced situation. And I think that everyone was taking a very, like, you know, one-dimensional view of it.
Yes, very well said. And I just want to reiterate, what she did was gross, and especially harping on it and keeping going and going that night how she did. And then the next morning, not cool. It was not a good look. I do not approve of that. What I'm saying right now is that this whole thing of the whole cast acting like she was bullying Carl, like walking around calling him Cocaine Carl everywhere, making it like this big cartoon character. Here comes Cocaine Carl. That's not what happened. She was saying, are you using because you are being so mean to me, and the last time you were this mean to me was when you were using, which, you know, is different. So it's still not great, but it's just the way that they're twisting everything to use it as a weapon. These people who are involved aren't even involved in it. And I just think it's gross. It's unfair. I don't like it.
Yeah. Well, I think that one of the reasons why Andy seemed to be particularly harsh to Lindsay is because I think what comes out over the hour is that he was pretty pissed off by the narrative that she spun, which is that Carl called up the producers and the producers came and like did Carl's bidding. And Andy really hates that. He hates when production is made to look like a puppet of the stars. And we saw he like went out of his way to reiterate, no, production makes its own choices and will follow its own story, you know? And I think he was really pissed at Lindsay for spinning a narrative. I think that was my takeaway from it.
I got that too. He was like clearly pissed, but at the same time, he was so full of shit because Carl said that he called the producers. So the only thing that was in question was, did Carl call the producers to break up with Lindsay? No, Carl is saying that he called the producers just to see what would happen and to have a conversation, which is bullshit because they had already finished filming. So we, anyone with a brain, and sorry if you don't disagree with me, I'm not calling you stupid. I'm just saying your brain is, that was not a good way to phrase it. But
anyone who's a good, decent person.
In my opinion, yeah, any decent person would see that that's what he's doing. You call the cameras go down, you call them to come film you, you have a scene with your friend, like, should I break up with her? Should I not break up with her? And then the big thing to end the season is you not breaking up with her, saying, oh, you know what we should do? Work it out. You've already said that a million times. You were calling to have a definitive conversation. Give me a fucking break, you wuss. And the fact that he still can't even admit to anything and makes it like, I never even broke up with her. Lindsay's spinning this narrative that I broke up with her and I never even broke up with her. You are such an absolute wuss. And then crawling all over the place like, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm sorry, everybody. It's my fault too. I mean, I know it's my fault too. Right, everybody, right? And acting like an abuse victim, basically, to make her look like he's so terrified. So everybody's like, poor Carl. Carl, this isn't all your fault, Carl. Why are you falling on the sword? I mean, the whole thing was just such bullshit. And to have the whole cast jumping on Carl's side when you know Carl's a fucking liar and you know Carl treats people like shit. The fact that every single person did it was just gross. Boo. Yeah.
Well, let's get into it. Let's get into the fine details. We got nothing else to say except that you can watch us on Crap is on Demand and you can see my sweater, which for some reason is like radioactive white today. Do you see this right now? Do you see my sweater?
I like it.
I'm like wearing, I'm like my, I've like stuck my head through a giant marshmallow at this
point. You look like one of Carl's teeth, actually.
I do. There's actually stripes. The stripes are off camera, so they don't, they break up the whiteness. But yeah, I'm dressed up like Carl's tooth. I'm like in the series finale of Family Ties when like, what isn't like Michael J. Fox like appears to Meredith Baxter Burney as like a giant tooth. It's like, I'm all grown up, mom. Remember? Is that just me?
I don't.
Okay. Or imagine if that just never happened. I just carried that memory for some reason.
It's a disturbing thing. So I feel like I would have remembered it. He dressed like a giant tooth.
Well, because she was like at some sort of like recital. I think it was like the kid, the little kid that comes later in the series. And he's like at school and he's like dressed like a little tooth. It's like the baby tooth has fallen out of the mouth. And then Meredith Baxter Burney then sees like a vision of like Alex Pekin as a big tooth. It's like I'm all grown up.
Wow.
Did this happen? Because I can also imagine Carl doing that. Hey, oh, I'm big. I'm all grown up now.
I'm all grown up now, Bob.
I love how this episode has begun with 8 minutes of you furious and me being like, guys, remember that episode of Family Ties?
Well, good. I think the audience needed it. I don't know why I came in that angry.
I know why, because I vented to you about something I was annoyed about beforehand. And so I probably revved you up and you're like,
ah! I don't know. I think I just watched Summer House and then I was like, oh, I'm not mad. And then I came back here and I was like suddenly furious. But, you know, there you go. So for the 20 people still listening after all of that, let's get into it, shall we?
Yeah. So we are actually at a completely different like aspect of Summer House. We are still with Paige. Telling off West because West is a piece of shit now and no one likes him anymore. So this is when she's saying, you know, like, we don't live our real lives because there's a camera. We live our real lives because we just dress really well. And so then Sierra.
Cameras live for me. I don't live for cameras. So.
And cameras run from Danielle. Let's be honest.
Listen, no one is as broken as a camera is that's focused on Danielle.
Do you know the camera industry almost actually closed when Danielle came into the picture? Pun intended.
So Andy's like, well, Paige, you said that you would literally kill West if he hurt Sierra. What do you think about that? And she's like, well, not literally, because jail scares me. Jail is terrifying. Have you seen what they feed you in jail? Have you seen what people in jail wear?
Literally like a big brick building full of Lindsays. Like, it's horrifying.
No one is allowed to like or subscribe in jail. So I will never be going to jail.
She goes, so not literally, Andy, you idiot. Like, why would I literally kill him? But she's my friend. And when she's done with you, I don't know you, Wes. And so then Andy, you know, Wes is like, oh. Hey, Wes, what is your biggest regret? Was it screwing the pooch with a potential supermodel? He's like, well, Sierra, like Sierra might regret like our however month journey, but like, I don't. Okay, well, do you regret this crazy cream suit you're wearing that doesn't fit? Because we have a lot of regrets about that.
Do you regret dressing like a dinner theater version of Guys and Dolls if it took place in a insane asylum and everything was cream colored? West, just continuing with this stream of pure charisma, is like, my feelings were genuine. Hold on, let me pout. Powder face. But I just expressed myself too late. And then it was too late to figure stuff out. But like, obviously it's painful for you, but like, it's painful for me, but I know it's my fault. But like, what are you even saying, dude? You don't make any sense. I love hearing that, but my feelings were genuine. I just expressed myself too late. What does that mean? Your feelings were genuine, but you expressed them too late, that you broke up with her too late, that you should have broken up with her earlier, or that you realized how you felt for her too late? Are you insinuating that you still have some kind of feeling there? Like, what is he even saying?
Sir, you're a journalist. You know how to use your words, okay? You literally, these are simple things, and you work for something called Complex, so you can handle it. So Andy's like,
he's a sports like, journalist, though. I mean, no offense, but isn't that like a lot different? I just feel like I've seen a lot of sports journalism, and to a lay person, this is what it sounds like.
LeBron! It's LeBron!
That's all
sports
I hear.
Sports journalism is actually the most hilarious version of journalism because they are so ridiculous. You know, for all the stuff, men are not supposed to show emotions, Jesse Solomon. You have never seen more emotional men than in sports journalism. Okay, first of all, every documentary they show is to make men cry. It's like, and then as he was doing the slam dunk, he thought about his grandmother who died 40 years ago. And then, like, it's always that. And every article is like an outraged guy being like, and the fact that they got rid of Jeff Van Gundy. And you're like, okay, just relax, sir. And then they make fun of us. Like, they make fun of these shows. Like, oh, these shows where women just get into arguments. I'm like, have you seen your writing, sir? Have you seen it? I'm telling you, like, the articles, the way they're written are so huffy. There's always something like, and it was looking like it was going to be a great season until it wasn't. And it's like, everything is like that. Everything is like, and they thought they were making a great idea trading, you know, Patrick Mahomes to Kansas City. Well, look how that turned out. I was like, how is this good writing? You're sassing off to like someone in the front office someplace.
Well, then I have to say, then I need more of that in West, because this, whatever he's doing here is just, he's speaking in ellipses. It's just like, I thought. Like, bro, could you show up to fucking work, right? So Andy's like, Sierra, do you have a response? And she goes, it's fine. And he goes, doesn't seem fine, everybody. Sierra's crying again. Anyone else think it's fine? Anyone? I just want to point out, this is one of the greatest love stories ever told. We got 5 minutes of ellipses and then a great response from Sierra. It's fine. All right. Anybody going to write that down? Jane Campion, do you want to take that one on?
I just have like images of like naked Harvey Keitel. How do you say his name?
Keitel.
I'm like, Keitel. Imagine if Harvey Keitel joins the cast of Summer House. That'd be so awkward.
Still a fuck boy. Like, no matter who you get, they're just a fuck boy. You know, it's like Harvey Keitel's like, well, you know, I'm famous now, so I couldn't commit, you know.
All right, guys. For this weekend's party, the theme is a poker table in the middle of the backyard, and we're all smoking at it. Oh, okay. Thanks, Harvey. So this is the reunion where no one wants to cry. It's hilarious. You know, Jesse doesn't want to cry. Sierra doesn't want to cry. Everything is like, I told myself I wouldn't cry. So Kyle's like, well, I still ship them if they want to get back together. Know what I'm saying? And Andy's like, okay, well, would you give him another shot, Sierra? She goes, I mean, it would have to be like a world of change. And I just don't know if people can change, so.
And then Jesse laughs and he's like, so you're telling me there's a chance then? Yeah, and this is where you completely fucking lost me. You're still saying that there's a chance? Are you fucking crazy? What What have I just been doing all week? I've been making little dolls to stick pins of with stupid teenager hair that I've been calling West and throwing against the wall. I threw one in the dryer, okay? And now you're telling me, oh, well, you'd have to change a lot. No, the answer is no, okay? Date someone outside of a fucking TV show. Please, do yourself a favor. I really like Sierra, and I don't like this self-torture. When are you going to learn? You went from Luke, you went to Austin, you went to West. They're not here, Sierra. Meet someone in the fucking doctor's lounge, okay? I get it.
Ronnie, you got it totally mistaken. She meant, like, you have to change out of that suit. That's all.
I don't know if people can change their hair so many times and for it to still be this terrible. So no, Andy, I will
change the middle
part. That's what I need to hear, bro. But like, after all this, you're still going to give him a chance just because you're both on TV. I can't, Sierra. I can't. And I'm rooting for you, Sierra. But please don't do me wrong like this.
Well, then she does the whole, I can't sit here and say, I don't like him. And he's like, oh, so you do have feelings for him. She goes, yeah, I mean, of course. So then she starts crying. He's like, Wes, what do you think about that? He goes, I mean, same, but like, I didn't expect to hear that. All right, Wes has passed out on the sofa.
Oh my God, please just do me a favor and don't write your own vows. You know what I mean? Like, we've been through enough. This reunion was really rough. Wow. So Kyle, so now they're on break milling about or whatever. And then Sierra tells Jesse, she's like, guess I could apologize to tell you, should apologize to you for telling you to shut up, but whatever. And he goes, yeah, you know, I try to defend my friend, but I'm just trying to defend my friend, but your feelings are valid. And I'm real sad that you're sad, okay? Your feelings are valid, Toots, okay? Jesse just knowing all the right things to say. Love your feelings. So valid. Which is why Paige, I just totally stood up for the douchebag who fucked you over 5 minutes ago. Okay.
Paige is like, Wes was like about to cry. I think he was like looking at Danielle and just started to sob. I mean, I think it happens to so many of us. That's why you can't look at her directly in the face.
Well, I feel bad for that. And she goes, for saying exactly what happened, you do not feel bad for that. You do not. He's just scared about the public not liking him. He doesn't give a shit about you. Do you understand that, Sierra? Get your head back in the game. Sierra! Slap, slap, slap. Sierra, focus.
Shake, 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 shake. Slap.
Paige directing the scene. She's like, you will not go back to him. Which, thankfully, you know, thankfully, Paige is there to be like, hell no. But Sierra just goes, whatever. Like, whatever, mom. I'm going to date whoever I want to. Sierra, I swear to God, I'm getting so upset about this show right now, okay? I just spent all week having a fucking parade for Sierra about this douchebag. And now you're just going to go back and do the same thing. How could you do this to me?
First rule of Bravo, don't have high hopes.
It's time for a commercial. It's time for a Crappens commercial.
Peyton, it's happening. We're finally being recognized for being very online.
It's about damn time. I mean, it's hard work being this opinionated.
And correct.
You're such a Leo.
All the time. Yeah. So if you're looking for a home for your worst opinions.
If you're a hater first and a lover of pop culture second.
Then join me, Hunter Harris.
And me, Peyton Dix, the host of Wondery's newest podcast, Let Me Say This.
As beacons of truth and connoisseurs of mess, we are scouring the depths of the internet so you don't have to.
We're obviously talking about the biggest gossip and celebrity news.
Like, it's not a question of if Drake got his body done, but when.
You are so messy for that, but we will be giving you the B-sides, don't you worry. The deep cuts, the niche, the obscure.
Like that one photo of Nicole Kidman after she finalized her divorce from Tom Cruise.
Mother, a mother to many. Follow Let Me Say This on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Listen to episodes everywhere on May 22nd, or you can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app on Apple Podcasts.
I'm Shimol Yai, and I have a new podcast called The Competition. Every year, 50 high school senior girls compete in a massive scholarship competition.
I wouldn't say I have an ego problem, but I'm extremely competitive.
All of the competitors are used to being the best and the brightest, and they're all vying for a huge cash prize.
This will probably be the most intense thing you've ever gone through in your life.
I remember that feeling because I was one of them. I lost. But now, I'm coming back as a judge, and also a kind of teen girl anthropologist. Because if you want to understand what it's like to be a young woman in America today, the competition's not a bad place to start.
Hopefully, no one will die on stage tonight.
From Pineapple Street Studios and Wondery, this is The Competition.
Follow the competition on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to the competition early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
So Jesse, the camera guy, is like, all right, here we go, Andy. And of course, Jesse's like, here we go, Andy. Really,
yeah, please have not, Jesse.
I just can't co-sign Jesse's crooning.
I can't either. Please be quiet. The only reason people aren't asking you to be quiet is because you're somewhat hot.
Exactly. No, I think he's actually, I think he's like not somewhat hot. I think he's like full on 100% hot. And that's why he's using his hot. I think he's like, if you saw him in a party, you'd be like, oh my God.
He's hot. Yeah, he's hot.
He's hot. No, let's, he's hot. He is hot. He is hot.
I just don't want to give him that much credit because he's singing too much. I think the singing is taking away the hotness, I have to say.
Yeah, I think that maybe it's like when you're there in person and he's so tall that when the notes finally like descend down to your ears, they sound good. But when we hear it directly into the mic, we can hear how they're not like amazing notes. They're decent, but not amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, they're hot people notes. You know what I mean?
Hot people
I
just feel got, like the notes have tall would... privilege.
Yeah.
Tall notes.
So Andy's like, we're back. Well, for the past 8 years, we've watched Colin and Amanda go from a late night booty call fuck boy fuckwit to still a late night booty call fuck all fuckwit. But Amanda's kind of sick of him, but never ever going to leave him. So let's see how that's going. And it's 8 minutes of, oh, Amanda, why are you dreaming like that, man? Why are you spending time with me, man? And Amanda being like, yeah. These two, and then fucking Kyle, they cut out all of Kyle's meanest stuff and make Kyle look shocked. Like just a fun little wacky sitcom husband. Kyle's a drunk who screams and yells at his wife and calls her a bitch, like what, every year, at least once a year on TV? And we're not going to even address that ever?
I literally thought that this was going to be a three-part reunion and the middle episode was going to be like 45 minutes of the Kyle and Amanda situation because it was so toxic this season. It was so dysfunctional.
Yeah.
He was so condescending to her. And she's no angel either. You know, she really is a nag. I'm sorry. She's a nag, but he, like, a nag with reason. Like, she has earned her nagging.
It's definitely and justified whatever nagging happened.
And he is, and he's like drunk, you know, like the whole time. And he's like flagrantly not doing the things to make her happy. She says she finally wants to do something for herself. And his male fragility can't deal with it. He has a meltdown. He throws things across the yard. I was like, this is 45 minutes worth. This is, we're going to dive right into it. And the fact that this was actually only just really a segment and the gist of the segment was like, oh, Amanda was depressed. And that was like, it's almost suggesting like, oh, maybe if she wasn't depressed, this wouldn't have been.
It's all Amanda's fault. It's all the woman's fault.
I didn't like that at all.
Every fucking time, it's all the woman's fault. And it's Amanda doing it too. She's like, but it was me. I was depressed, Andy. And so he had a right to be upset. No, he didn't. He didn't have a right to be treating you like that. Like, I'm sorry. Yeah. He didn't. It's bullshit. And I'm so sick of it. And I'm so sick of her playing into it. It's gross. And I don't like that nobody's even going to ask. I mean, Kyle and Amanda here's what really pisses me off. Kyle and Amanda sit up here like the prom queen and king. They know better than everybody else about relationships. They're like the veteran relationship. They're going to stay together forever, everybody. So they're like the model couple. They clearly are like, we've had a shit season. People are always telling us to break up. Or people have spent the entire season telling us just to break up and we're miserable human beings. So let's go to this reunion as a united front and we'll just be lovey-dovey and kiss each other after every answer and avoid all the abusive questions if they come. And that's what they do. But then when it comes to Lindsay and Carl, and they're accusing Lindsay of like, oh, well, you're trying to hide stuff from the cameras and you're trying to make everything seem like it's perfect when it was never perfect. What do you think you two are doing? Why do these two get away with doing it, but then they villainize everybody else's relationship?
Well, that's also think about like
hypocrisy.
How unfair is it that like, you know, Lindsay and Carl in their segment, you know, they're having their back and forth and Kyle keeps chiming in on behalf of Carl really inappropriately and really rudely and going after Lindsay when Lindsay was actually pretty respectful during the Kyle and Amanda segment and could have a million times butt in and been like, well, why did you act like that to her? In fact, no one did. I was shocked at how small, considering how much of a big chunk of the season this was. Like the Kyle and Amanda thing was not nothing. It was not like a little C story. This was like a major storyline. It almost rivaled Carl and Lindsay for the season. And the fact that it was sort of shoehorned into this tiny little segment in episode two, I felt like it was actually a little bit of a failure on the production's part in how they presented this reunion.
It was a huge failure, and it's a weird way to protect their stars. And I don't know, it just, the whole thing rubbed me the wrong way. I found it really gross. So let's go into some of this plasticky bullshit. So Amanda said that you agreed to live in the burbs, Kyle. So that's the question. And so Kyle's like, well, to clarify, I don't want to live in the burbs. I mean, I grew up in the burbs. All right. And so what I said was, when I have kids, they're old enough to play in the street, and that's when I'm going to move to the burbs. So, you know, maybe it got misconstrued. Okay, so that's the end of that, huh? So no follow-up
question. No follow-up question of like, so what's the plan now? Are you going to, like, you can see that this would make her happy. She said she wants a yard. Would you, like, are you willing to make concessions to make your wife happy? Don't you feel like she's made a lot of concessions for you and you're not doing anything? No, none of those questions whatsoever. We just move right on ahead.
Yeah, so Matt is like, well, I don't think I've ever heard when they're old enough to play in the street. And then Paige is laughing. She's like, hey, yeah, like when it goes to school, I guess. Not when it's a baby, because that would be bad. Babies playing in the street. I mean, unless they were baby Danielle's. I say, here's your preschool. It's a freeway. Have fun. Have fun playing in that.
Can we put Danielle's dress in the street so I could get run over? It'd actually improve it. So Andy's like, well, Amanda, you've stayed with Kyle through his cheating, his lying, and his mullet. How do you reconcile with that with the things he said to you about feeling lonely in your marriage and being weary of starting a family? So she's like, well, I love him, unfortunately, so very much. And like, this guy's my best friend. And in his defense, like, why in his defense? He, you know, through the past year, I was on the road to becoming very depressed, and I was checked out, and I wasn't talking to my friends. I was quite. But why is that in his defense? Isn't that actually to his detriment, that like, considering that you have been in the funk for like 2 years, that he was like not interested in making any sacrifices that might bring some happiness into your life?
Yeah, isn't it worse that you were depressed and he was walking around the house throwing things wasted and calling you a bitch on national TV? Doesn't that actually make it worse? It doesn't excuse it. She's like, but then being excused, and I was depressed. And then Andy's like, but why are you depressed? And she's like, oh, it just runs in my family. Now, look, that is kind of how depression works sometimes. It just comes over you and you can't help it, you know, which is why there's medication and stuff like that. But a lot of time, depression actually is based on actual things that are happening. So I don't like the whole, like, well, let's see. I'm not doing anything that I like to do. Kyle is shooting down anything that I would want to do, which, by the way, is another thing that they're accusing Lindsay of, when Kyle literally is doing it the whole season. Like, I just can't.
Yeah, that's a great
point. And we're just going to ignore it. You know, we're just going to ignore all that so that they can be the perfect little couple. And she can say, well, he's just wacky, but we're in love. He's my best friend. And at the end of the day, it's my fault for being depressed. Women, am I right?
You're so right. They really grilled Lindsay for shooting down Carl's ideas, which, by the way, his ideas are ridiculous.
Stupid.
It's a non-alcoholic cafe. I'm like, it's called a coffee shop.
It's called a fucking coffee shop with a TV, Carl.
You did not reinvent the wheel here. But yeah, you're right. They totally grilled Lindsay for shooting down everything that Carl has suggested. When we literally saw, like, when Amanda even like showed a hint of wanting to come up with her own entrepreneurial idea, Kyle literally had a hissy fit, a meltdown. He threw a can across the yard and was only able to apologize for his behavior when, like, he was essentially iced out.
Yeah. So she's talking about how antidepressants are amazing. And she goes, drugs are great. I mean, medication drugs, am I right? And then Kyle's like, yeah, like, we talked about loneliness and, like, we talked about her anxiety. I mean, I know about that stuff, you know, because, like, when we got married, she went into a funk. Hi, just as someone who's watched your show, before you got married, she was in a funk too.
Yeah.
And during your marriage, she's been in a funk. Kyle, it's you. I'm sorry. Someone has to point it out. You're the funk. Funky funk. Yeah.
You're a funky DJ. I mean, I think I would probably also be in the funk. So, yeah, basically, like, she hit, like, she had never really gotten out of her post-wedding blues. And then after BravoCon, she hit her ultimate low.
Which is interesting, isn't it? Because she went from the wedding, because that's a normal thing, right? You get so much attention. You're working on your wedding for so long. You get so much attention. It's all about you for so long. And then that's over. And it's like, well, you just go back to normal life. And there's like a depression that comes after that. And then Bravo comes this whole thing that's also about you. And it's like celebrating you and you're a star and this. And then that ends and then you're depressed. Like she's going to constantly need some kind of a tentpole event to make her feel celebrated because she ain't gonna.
Maybe it's about like two high profile events where she has to stand and smile and play nicey nice with Kyle and just appear like we're like the happiest couple in front of the masses. And then maybe it's like the insincerity of that, or maybe the frustration or whatever issues that she has that she feels unresolved. Afterwards, she has to sit with that and she has to deal with probably what she feels versus how she acted in terms of like having to pretend. And maybe that's tough for her.
Yeah. Yeah. Jesus. Yeah. So then Andy's like, Will Sierra tied for pod. What's that?
Maybe she's just deeply miserable.
No, I like that. I was following all that. I hadn't thought of that aspect of it. I like that. So Andy's like, Sierra, rolling from Poli says, how come you said you don't know who Amanda is outside of Kyle? That wasn't very nice. Okay. And Sierra's like, well, I just wanted her to think about what she wants, not what Kyle wants, because I don't even care about Kyle. And he's like,
ugh. And Andy's like, Kyle, why did you react so poorly to that? And he's like, if I could take it back, I would. But because she has so many emotional issues and said she's wanted to do something else on top of that, I'm like, I mean, how could you even have an ambition? How could you even decide you want to have a plan to get out of your funk when you're in a funk? Like, that's just like wild to me.
God, this, and he's so disgusting. And nobody calls him out. He's like, yeah, you know, I wouldn't have been mean, but, you know, like, he hurt her. She's got emotional issues, and now she wants a job. I mean, come on.
Now she wants to do something for herself. I mean, it's just like a lot.
And I was like, oh, perfectly normal. What a romantic answer, Kyle. And then, so Andy's like, well, what do you feel about Kyle saying he wants to be a DJ? And Sierra's like, and now he is a DJ. So it turns out Kyle has become a DJ. He takes classes in Jersey.
Yeah. Every Thursday in Jersey. Which, by the way, Amanda, why don't you use that? Say, we can get a house in Jersey and you'll be close to your DJ lessons. So Andy's like,
she just needs to say, Jersey is the place where middle-aged men become DJs. Oh, boom. Yeah. You already got him there. You know,
it's the land for your midlife crisis. Okay. You can go there, take your DJ lessons, get an ear pierced, get a Corvette, you know, you'll be great.
You can also get drunk with strangers in Jersey. Okay. Spinning records. It's going to be great.
Yeah. Why don't you visit Little Big Town or whatever the name of whatever the Manzo's Bar and Grill was in what's it called? In Hoboken. Which, by the way, that's another thing, Carl. The Manzos, they were those boys, Albie and Christopher, they were at the peak of their popularity, and they were in like a place like this was their domain, and they opened up a full-fledged sports bar right there in Hoboken at the peak of their popularity, and they still couldn't make it work. So why do you think you, sort of in your post-popularity, opening up a not great concept? Why do you think that's going to work? It's just not going to work.
You know, in Carl's thing, like, I don't even want to shit on people's dreams.
If the Manzos can't do it, why do you think you could do it? Something I never thought I'd say.
I know. You're putting the Manzos, like, on a pedestal for somebody else. Like,
if Lord Manzo couldn't launch Cafes, why did you think that you could launch your non-alc sports bar?
Look, here's the thing. Like, I don't want to shit. I mean, it is fun to make fun of Kyle being a DJ, but you go do you, boo. You know, like, and I don't want to shit on people's dreams. If Carl's dream is to do this, then that's cool. You know, if he's willing to put in the hard work and stuff. The problem is, it's not about shitting on his dreams. It's that he never had one. It's the fact that he's just throwing shit at the wall and then wondering why Lindsay is not super excited about it is the thing. It's not like he's had this idea for a year and he really wanted to do it. She said, have you thought about your career at all? Because you're supposed to be thinking about your career and you've called this meeting. So what do you want to talk about? And he goes, yeah, I've been thinking about my career. I mean, how about this? Being an actor. No. A sports bar with no alcohol. I don't want to spend all our money on that.
How dare you? You've killed my dream.
It's not a dream, Carl. It's a stupid random idea you came up with 30 seconds ago.
I totally agree in the sense that, like, I think everyone should follow their dreams or passions. Like if they have an idea that they want to do, like totally do it. But that's different than like forging a career for yourself. Like if you just are like, hey, I want to do this thing. And it's like a really, honestly, it's just not a realistic at this moment, a realistic view for something. I'm going to walk that back. It's not that's realistic. It's just a known gamble to open up a restaurant anyway, and then to do a sort of a new concept with that sort of restaurant is even more of a gamble. And to those people who take those gambles and it pays off, it's wonderful. But Lindsay in that moment is like, I'm looking for more stability. I'm looking for more career stability because I want to stay home and raise this child that we talked about having, which is something that really gets lost in this reunion. Everyone's like, well, Lindsay, you're also an influencer. But she said she wants to raise this child. And he's aware of that. That's the family dynamic they want to have. And he comes out with a thing that's like a gamble. And it's like, I think that like there's something about Bravo. Maybe this is just a feature of nowadays, the 2024, that a career does not necessarily mean you have to invent something. You don't have to become an entrepreneur. You don't have to create a brand. You don't have to like create a restaurant. You don't have to have a fashion line. You can get a job at a company and work your way up. That's a career too. And it's totally viable. And it's a great way to make a living. And it's like, you don't have to like sit there and think for months on end, like, what's my great idea I'm going to bring to Shark Tank? You don't have to do that. You don't have to be Bethany Frankel. You can just like God, look on monster.com. Speaking of Bethany.
I was going to say, what is that Bethany dating site or what?
Look to see if there's any job openings that look interesting to you. Because guess what? You could find something that really lights your fire just at a workplace, okay?
Yeah, because Amanda is kind of the female Carl in this way, because then Andy's like, well, Carl's doing a DJ, so Amanda, that's cool. So he has a dream. So now what do you want to do outside of Loverboy, Amanda? You've had months to think about this. Go. And she's like, I would love, I don't know, like a brand. Like, I would love to, like, have a brand that's an extension of me, kind of like how Kyle has Loverboy, you know, like that. It's like, well, okay, you know.
The thing is this. I think the unspoken thing is that everyone's thinking, we're on this platform, a national platform, and we want to capitalize off of it. How can we do something that we capitalize off of it and turn it into, like, a multimillion dollar thing? And everyone feels that pressure to do it. And what I'm just saying is you don't have to do that. You could just get a job. There's like really nothing wrong with getting it. And it's like, I'm not saying go work at Zara, you know, which there's nothing wrong with that. But like, you can just like put your car onto the on-ramp and get onto a career highway there, you know?
Yeah. All right. So now it's just like, where are they now? And Amanda and Kyle just talk about how much they love each other and how perfect they are for each other. And they kiss. And Jesse's like, yeah, can I just say as a newcomer, like, it's crazy to see these two kids. I mean, they are perfect for each other. And like, the internet doesn't really get it. But let me just tell you, these two are really, really, I mean, perfect for each other. Okay. Thanks. So then Lindsay looks all mad, by the way. They cut to Lindsay and she's like, okay, so now we get to sit here and watch these two fucking fake it, and let's come back to like dragging me across the coals after this guy just fucking emotionally abused this woman all year. That'll be fun.
Commercials. Here comes one right now.
I'm Elena, an autopsy technician.
And I'm Ash, a hairstylist.
And we just love swapping stories about all of the morbid things that fascinate us.
And if you do too, join us on our podcast, Morbid. It's a safe space to let your weirdo flag fly.
On Morbid, we cover dark historical events, sinister science, unnerving paranormal events, and sordid high society murders.
We also dive deep into the most notorious crimes in history.
Our podcast is grounded in rigorous and painstaking research. We're also not afraid to read a
We keep it weird because a dash of snark is necessary to get through grotesque true tales of demented minds.
So follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Morbid early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
So then Andy's like, all right, well, this year, instead of sending it, they were singing it. And so we see yet again another clip of Jesse singing his song. And of course, Jesse is the sort of person who sings along to his own clip package. So he's like there in the little box going, what would Jesse Solomon do? And they're all singing like, what would Jesse Solomon do? And then they don't know any of the other lyrics. It just peters out.
It's just like they did that happened in the beginning of the reunion where Andy was like, oh, I've been singing, what would Jesse Solomon do? And Jesse goes, yeah, that was fun. That was fun. It was a fun project. Worked with some pretty great people on that one. That was good. You know, just excited for more projects, Andy.
Okay. He really is acting like he collaborated with Daft Punk or something. So you see it. Andy's like, well, so Method from Counterspray says, Paige, did you get Jesse to flirt with you because you like attention? And she's like, I like attention, of course, like the good kind, not like Danielle's dress kind. And like, I'm on a stage, okay? But like, I don't think I was like overly flirtatious, but I was like nice and he was funny. And he like called me out 4 times today because like I touched his leg, which is like ridiculous because like, why would I ever touch his leg? And then we see a clip package of her like touching his leg over and over and over again.
Yeah, I've been like, oh, Jesse, you're hilarious. Oh, Jesse. Well, Paige, you said Craig wasn't worried about Jesse after he met him. Oh, that was pretty gold, am I right? She's like, okay, well, look, I mean, Danielle had a point. I mean, in interviews, I admit it, but I just meant his personality's goofy and like Craig wasn't worried, you know, because I was like, someone touched my leg, Craig. And he's like, oh, okay, Paige, cool. You know, like panda bears aren't real. So,
I mean, why should I really be concerned about like, why should Craig be concerned about Jesse? He kind of looks like a cartoon cactus. All that's missing is like a little cowboy hat and a bandana. Am I right, everyone? Just look at him. Just look. Visualize it. Look at that face on a cactus. It's there. You're welcome.
So, Andy, do you think that Jesse, here's my question. Do you think Jesse and Sierra are going to start a love triangle? Wes is going to get all jealous now. I think Jesse likes Amanda and Sierra, but I think he's going to date Sierra. What do you think?
Well, I think that Sierra knows that Jesse is a through and through fuckboy. Like that. The thing is, Jesse has never even tried to hide it. We've seen it all summer. He's just been a fuckboy with people that aren't on the show. So it's been kind of like, not an issue for us. We just see him bringing girls in and then he's like, oh yeah, I got my Thursday girl, I got my Tuesday girl, and then on Wednesday I go to Starbucks and I flirt with a girl there. And we're like, ah, ha, 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 ha. But like everyone sees
what it. Does Sierra care? She was with Austin. She still liked Austin even after all of that, and she's still probably going to give West another chance. So, and Jesse did do the thing where he's like, oh well, look, I'm admitting I'm a fuck boy, but guess what, if I find the right girl, that's all I'm looking for. You know, yeah, so he's doing the golden ticket thing.
Like, who's going to get the golden ticket?
Exactly.
You know what?
Who's going to be lucky enough to win my affection?
I don't think Sierra's going to go for him, because what I do see from Sierra is someone who I do believe is trying to grow. I do think that she is really trying to, with each failure, she's trying to take lessons from that and apply it going forward. So I do think that, like, everything with West was such a massive improvement with, you know, like with Austin. And I think she's going to take from that and apply it to the next one. So I don't think she's going to go with Jesse. Go with Jesse like she's in the 1950s.
You can go with Jesse. Are you guys going together? What's next here?
Cancer. Say, so brave of you to share cancer and to share about it. I mean, we caught you on camera and then we asked you questions about it. Why was it so important? And he's like, oh, well, it's important. He's nice. You know, he says it's good to show that didn't affect me and, you know, move forward, etc. And then Andy was asking about, like, you know, like, hey, you have this incredibly scary thing that's happening to you. It's deeply personal to you. Why didn't you share it with everyone in the household? It's like,
so
I wonder why.
Seriously, it's so gross. Like, what was it on camera? Why were you hiding from the cameras? You were crying. You were almost dead and you didn't put it on camera. Where the hell do you think you are? Costco sample counter? Come on.
Well, as a man, you don't want to show emotion, but what you want to do is sing emotion. I am really sad this weekend. I'm so sad. I'm sad, Jesse Solomon.
All right. Well, that was a real banger. Okay. Thanks for the cancer banger there. So he basically is like, yeah, I thought that men couldn't show emotion. And Amanda goes, Kyle does. He's literally already cried today. And then it's like 5 minutes ago. And Kyle's like, what Sierra just said was so sad. It was so sad.
So Jesse's like, yeah, I was wrong to feel that way. And it was an insecurity of mine. And like the messages from fans were like super rewarding, especially the ones that had nudes. So yeah, I'm like really glad I showed emotion.
And Wes is just looking at him like, God, I love you. I love you so fucking much.
Did we talk about the fact, I don't think we talked about it, that Wes was so nervous during his segment that he like lifted up his armpit during the break and was like, look at this. And he had giant sweat stains through the blazer. Did you see that?
Mm-mm. Gross.
Ooh, it was intense. It was really intense.
So now let's talk about Lindsay and Carl some more. Okay, so now we get into the cocaine Carl. Dun, dun, dun. So clips of Lindsay wasted saying Carl wasn't sober that night. And then Carl is telling us, I went to the summer thinking we had stuff, but I didn't think people would find out about it because I wanted to protect it. Okay, so Carl's not going to get in trouble for not bringing things on camera now?
So Lindsay's like, well, you know, when I got to the house, I'm like on edge. I didn't know what was going to happen with the girls. And like, you know, it was like, it's going to take us a minute, you know. And she talks about how like coming out of the reunion, you know, all the girls came for her and she was in a fight with Danielle. She just didn't know where she was going to stand. And so she started to drink because she was really anxious. And which, by the way, it's always great to do when you're engaged to someone who's sober. And then they went to the club and then she wound up in like an Uber or a Lyft with all the guys. And she just was afraid that it was going to be used against her. And so she was sort of like waiting for some sort of like awkwardness or fight with the girls. And she expressed that to Carl and she just felt very, very dismissed. And she says that she wants a partner to be like, you know, it's okay. Don't worry. The girls will be fine. Instead, he was like, just get over it. It was very dismissive. And then Kyle goes, there was no dismissiveness. It was all in your head, all in your head. What?
He says,
that literal sentence was, could not have been more dismissive. No, I was being dismissive to you. You were just like a crazy woman coming up with crazy concoctions inside your crazy woman head.
Yeah, it's all in your head, Lindsay.
And she's like, you don't get to tell me how I feel. He's like, oh, by the time we got to the club, you had a full-blown fight about something you manifested out of thin air. I mean, what, do you have depression or something? I'm all right, Amanda.
I mean, look, did she work herself into a tizzy over, like, some massive theoreticals? Yes, she absolutely did. She did make something in her head. But she also has a partner who spent a huge amount of energy all season saying like, I just want softness and tenderness. I just want like someone to be like a cheerleader for me, who like was not doing it for her, which it could go the other way around, which is that she was like, I'm not gonna be a cheerleader. But then she's also asking for a cheerleader. But the point is this, like, yes, this may have been all in her head, but Carl could have easily been like, hey, don't worry about it, babe. I got you. I got your back.
Well, we've seen Lindsay spin out of control and start screaming at boyfriends a million times for many, many reasons, okay? So especially when she's drinking. Hold on. Pardon me, I've just missed that sneeze right now. Wow. I didn't mean to dismiss you, but get over it. Get over it, sneeze. But here's what kills me. I don't doubt that Lindsay blew this out of proportion and then it became a huge fight or whatever. I didn't see it. It wasn't on TV. I'm just going to go ahead and give this one to Kyle because I know that Lindsay can act psychotic. Okay. So I'm going to go ahead and give that to Kyle because okay. I haven't given Kyle many lately. But here's where this whole thing falls apart for me. Kyle acting like somebody else is spinning out of control and being unreasonable when he just got to skip over an entire section of him calling his wife a bitch and throwing shit.
There you go.
Is a little bit hypocritical. And the fact that nobody calls him out like, oh, really, Kyle? You think, I mean, it's bad to start yelling at your partner over shit that you're just making up in your head? Really? Roll the clip, Andy.
I kind of wish Gabby were a better, like, better reality star, because really Lindsay had no one to chime in on her behalf for that. Like, you know, when you have like a bunch of people on your side, the benefit of having a bunch of people on your side is that you have more brains to think about, like, moments like this. And if it's just you, you may not have the capacity to think of all these moments. But the truth is this, if you want to talk about something that was concocted inside your brain, it was Kyle melting down the moment Amanda said, I was thinking about like figuring out some stuff for myself. And then he's like, you're going to leave me. You're going to leave me in the dust. It's like, I thought we were in this together. So it really is not fair for him to say that. And the other thing is that like you said, Lindsay, like losing her mind on her boyfriend's, you know, over something that she's whipped up in her head is like been something she's been doing since season one. And it goes back to that same thing we've been saying all year. Carl knew who he was getting engaged to. And now he's suddenly like surprised. It doesn't.
Well, Carl does it too. Carl flips out and he gets that flash of anger in his eyes where his eyes just turn black and glaze over. You know, like we've seen it happen to Carl a million times. Carl learns, you know, he reads the internet, he reads all the comments, and he tries to come back and change his personality, not change his personality, but change what he shows of his personality. And it works. Right. I mean, look how many people who are buying Carl's load of shit this season, you know, and we've seen Carl lose his temper all the time. And that's the thing that makes me crazy. Is there a toxic couple? They get together, they fight like crazy, they do it in front of other people, they ruin other people's time all the time. We've seen Carl and Lindsay date before this round when they tried dating the first time and he was a complete jackass to her. We saw that already. And so for everybody to pretend like none of that ever happened and Lindsay is just crazy, when we've seen that side of Carl many, many times, right. You know, it's just like the editing of history is what's making me nuts. And right. So Lindsay's like, you know what, Kyle, I was drinking in that moment and I had emotions. And what happens when I drink? And he goes, but there's a history of you drinking and becoming irate.
Kyle, are you fucking kidding me? That's your entire fucking plot on this show, is getting fucking hysterical, pissing all over the place, whipping your dick out, and then raging at everybody and raging at your wife and acting like a complete jackass and then blaming the alcohol and crying the next day to make everybody forgive you. You fucking man-child, you hypocrite.
Yeah, and he says, I'm not privy to all your fights, but I'm telling you that if this is how they all go, I can see why they spiral because of delusion. I'm like, well, first of all, again, let's really not take away from the fact that Lindsay is a disaster, and this has always been her thing, you know? But, like, let's, like, again, this is Carl who prided himself on navigating Lindsay's abandonment issues really well, he says, but clearly he's not, because she says he was ignoring me the entire time. She's clearly feeling abandoned in this moment, and he's just like, whatever, it's fine. Like you're being crazy right now. It's they're just a disaster, obviously. So anyway, Lindsay's like, you know what, Kyle? I'm just going to let you speak for me, Kyle. And he goes, well, I've known you for like 10 years. She goes, and I know you, Kyle. She's just getting frustrated because he's just jumping in. He's not letting her talk, which is so obnoxious. Like, regardless of whose side you're on in this thing, like, let them both just talk and have, like,
it's their It's not his. Like, you were right that she didn't jump into his and Amanda's bullshit, but he's there because Carl is too much of a fucking wuss to do anything, and Carl has built it up to where he's such a victim he can't even speak for himself.
Right, so that's the other
Kyle thing. Has to come in and save the poor other man from another horrific woman. At least his woman just admitted everything was her fault because she was depressed. When's Lindsay's moment to admit that everything is her fucking fault? And I can't stress enough how much Sierra and Paige are sitting there snickering at everything. Every really time Kyle tells off Lindsay, they snicker and they laugh at each other and point at Lindsay. I mean, you guys it's are really real fucking assholes. You guys are fucking assholes. You're like children. And this is why people go on the internet and call you mean girls, because you act like this sometimes. You know, you get like this. It's gross to watch it.
I'm an unabashed Paige fan. I even really like Kyle. We come down on Kyle so hard, but I actually really, really enjoy Kyle. But I think that Paige, in this moment, the way that she's like just laughing or whatever, I just think that she is being actually pretty obnoxious. And I didn't like that at all.
Yeah.
So then Andy's like, Carl, how did you feel about Lindsay? Crazy, crazy cuckoo Lindsay calling you cocaine Carl. Did you know about it before it aired? He's like, oh. Well, I did not know that she called me Cocaine Carl until it aired, and I know something was said, and I didn't know it was being said, but, like, what I struggle with is that, like, saying like that, that's, like, that was a big problem for me. Like, you've been so supportive of my journey. Like, you hugged me so tight, so hard. Harder.
Tighter. Please, tighter. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't hard enough or tight enough. Harder. Try harder.
How could you, like, hug someone so tight and then accuse me of being on a substance other than, like, addicted to hugs? Like, that I'm in recovery from. Like, that almost killed me. And I hope that you know that you accusing me of being on a substance can cause a relapse. And I've never been called Cocaine Carl my entire life.
Now, look, this is a moment where I do think Carl gets to have a monologue where he gets to go off about what an asshole she was, because she was an asshole. And this one, really, there's really no excuse. I will just say, again, reiterate from the beginning, you are not allowed to blame a relapse on anybody else. That is all you. And if you are out there and you are thinking like this, stop it. Your sobriety is your fucking responsibility. Man up and deal with it. And if you fail and you mess up, guess what? We all do. We all mess up and it's okay. You're not a bad person.
I have a question.
You're not a bad person for being an addict, and you're not a bad person for relapsing, and you're not a bad person. You're not, none of this makes you bad. Drugs and alcohol are addictive. It's them. They're bad. But don't blame other people for you relapsing. Take responsibility for your own life.
I have a question for you, Ronnie, and this is actually not like me challenging you, but this is, I can imagine someone might ask this. How do you reconcile saying, you know, well, you know, external factors can cause a depression in the case of Amanda, with also then saying, well, you're in charge of your own sobriety, like external factors, like that shouldn't matter. It's on you.
What do you mean, how to rectify it?
How do you reconcile? Because
you can be depressed. I mean, something can cause you massive depression, but it doesn't give you. A lot of times, what an addict will do is we will find a reason to use. So if you're depressed, for example, like I have a big problem with food, and I also have a problem with depression. So for a long time, I would get really depressed and binge out like crazy for days and days. I would just hide in my house and binge like crazy. I know this is TMI, but just so you know where I'm coming from.
Sharing safe space.
And when you get like, I kind of realized through through therapy and talking to people about it, sometimes the depression, I wasn't even really depressed. Like if I started talking through why I was depressed or what was going on or what was happening, it wasn't really that I was depressed. It's that I wanted to stay home and binge on food because I'm severely addicted to food. I'm a binge eater. And so it's almost like I'm finding an excuse. So if something would happen that was even minor, I would kind of blow it up into this huge thing. So I would have this reason to go back to my addiction. You know what I mean? And I'm not projecting that onto this situation. I'm not saying like my issues are these. I'm saying that's a very typical thing in addiction to kind of do and to fall into that thing. And so when you're in a fight with somebody or you break up with somebody or something very dramatic happens, it's very natural to say, well, I relapsed, but I relapsed because X happened, right? And in recovery, you have to learn you can't blame, because ultimately you're the one who used the substance, or you're the one who binged, or you're the one who went on the bender. And you cannot ever fix yourself if you don't take the power of saying, I'm the one who's hurting myself. And so I'm the one who can fix myself and stop hurting myself. Does that make sense? You have to take responsibility for hurting yourself, forgive yourself, and then take the responsibility for fixing yourself.
Mm. Okay. Yeah. Thank you for clarifying. Cause I just felt like, I think it's important to understand how those two different scenarios can coexist. So thank you for that.
You're right. You can be depressed, but it's how you deal with it. Are you going to be depressed and then go shoot up heroin or binge or get wasted? Or are you going to be depressed and go for a run, or, you know, find other positive ways? You know, it's a bitch. Addiction's a bitch. And I think that we simplify it so much on these shows that it's like everybody's using substances on these shows, especially Summer House and Vanderpump Rules and stuff like that. And we get to the point where we glorify it and we think it's hilarious. And, oh my God, these people are so wasted in this scene. But then when somebody has a problem, we're like, oh my God, we will never talk about it again. We will never talk. They're working through it. So we cannot talk about addiction anymore. We cannot talk about the good and the bad about it. You know, it's like either we ignore it and we glorify it and think it's hilarious, or we're like, uh-oh, that person has a problem. Never speak about it. And how do you get anywhere if you're like that, you know?
Yeah. Well, anyway, Lindsay says, you know, she says, like, first of all, I will say it was completely wrong of me to question your sobriety after how hard you worked. So I'm sorry that I mentioned it to begin with. But I don't think it was wrong to question your behavior when it was a little aggressive and dismissive. So then Kyle's like, but that's the problem. It wasn't. We all witnessed it. And she's like, am I allowed to speak? And he's like, no, there was no, end this ends with, I'm sorry. End it with, I'm sorry. Which I'm like, you know, I feel like when Lindsay was saying that, like, here is like a moment where she like, I can't stand this. I can't stand when there's a moment where you can start to see what could be the beginning of like productive communication. And then someone like a third party, like Kyle, jumps in like, say sorry. Like, that's not productive. You're just going into semantics here. She really did just apologize.
Well, I think he's right in the way that it's like, you were completely wrong on this. So you just need to say, I'm sorry. And that's it. But Lindsay can't, because she's still justifying it and saying, Well, but I was just questioning your aggression. Right, but you were also wasted and you were on national TV and you this was bad. You just need to say sorry. Like, period. I mean, I agree.
But you know, though, I want Carl to be the one fucking to say Kyle that.
Jumping in on everything. That's the thing. Kyle's I want business and nothing's going to get resolved. You're right, because he just keeps jumping in on everything.
I want Carl to be the one that responds and then gets her to a place where she realizes it really should just be like, I'm sorry, and that's it. But when Kyle does it, it's a distraction, and then it becomes a back and forth about, are you going to let me finish or whatever. It doesn't like lead to anything useful.
Yeah. So she's like, am I allowed to speak? So they just fight, and then Gabby throws her hands up because she goes, I would love for you to stop cutting me off. And then Gabby throws her hands up like, well, guys, I tried with Lindsay. You know, I'm getting kind of that vibe from Gabby now. Like, I tried, but look at Lindsay. She just can't control herself, you know? And at least that's what I'm getting. And so Kyle is like, you know, I don't know why you'd come after sobriety like you did. You know, there's not a world in which I can reason with that. And she's like, Kyle, I'm his partner, and I'm witnessing his behavior towards me. He goes, it doesn't pencil. It doesn't pencil out. It doesn't pencil out.
Lindsay's basically like, Kyle, you don't get to own my emotions. Hey everyone, this is the end of part one of this recap. For part two, keep an eye on your podcast feed. It is coming up in just a moment. Thanks so much for listening. Catch you on the second half.
Watch What Crappens would like to thank its premium sponsors.
Ain't no thing like Allison King.
Ashley Savoni, she don't take no baloney.
Strolling the park with Caitlin Clark.
She's not just a Sheila, she's a Daniela.
Itchels.
Erin McNicholas,
she don't miss no trickolas.
She's never scary, it's the Green Fairy.
Jamie, she has no last namey.
Hava Nagila Weber.
Know Your Worth with Jason Kurth.
Sipped some scotch with Jessica Trotch.
She's always supplying, it's Kelly Ryan.
Kristen the Piston Anderson.
Let's give a kisserino to Lisa Lino.
We want to hang with Liz Lang.
Megan Berg, you can't have a burger without the Berg.
The Bay Area Betches. Betches.
And our super premium sponsors.
Somebody get us 10 cc's of Betsy MD.
We're taking the gold with Brenda Silva.
Let's get real with Caitlin O'Neill.
Don't get salty with Christine Pepper.
Can't have a meal without the Emily Sides.
Nobody holds a candle to Jamie Kendall.
We got our wish, it's Jen Plish.
She's not harsh, she's Jill Hirsch.
She's a little bit loony.
Junie.
My favorite Murdo, Karen McMurdo.
We love him madly, it's Kyle Pod Chadley.
Let's go on a bender with Lauren Fender.
The incredible edible Matthews sisters.
Give him hell, Miss Noel.
Ring that bell for Rachel.
She's the queen bee, it's Sarah Lemke.
Shannon, out of a cannon, Anthony.
Let's take off with Tamla Plain.
She ain't no shrinking Violet Kuchar. We love you guys.
If you like Watch What Crappens, you can listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
It was the biggest scandal in pop music. The stars of Milli Vanilli, the Grammy-winning multi-platinum R&B phenomenon, were exposed as frauds. But none of this was their idea. So whose idea was it? Enter German music producer Frank Farian. He saw the success of acts like Michael Jackson and Prince, and he wanted in, no matter the cost. So he devised the perfect pop heist. Two once-in-a-lifetime talents who were charismatic, full of sex appeal, and phenomenal dancers. The only problem? They couldn't sing. But Frank knew just how to fix that. Wondery's new podcast, Blame It on the Fame, dives into one of pop music's greatest controversies and takes a never-before-heard look at the exploitation of two young Black artists. Milli Vanilli set the world on fire, but when the truth came out, Rob and Fab were the only ones who got burned. Looking back now, it's hard not to wonder, why did everyone blame them and not the man pulling the strings? Follow Blame It on the Fame, Milli Vanilli, on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of Blame It on the Fame early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Nancy's love story could have been ripped right out of the pages of one of her own novels.
She was a romance mystery writer who happens to be married to a chef.
But this story didn't end with a happily ever after.
When I stepped into the kitchen, I could see that Chef Brophy was on the ground, and I heard somebody say, call 911.
As writers, we'd written our share of murder mysteries. So when suspicion turned to Dan's wife, Nancy, we weren't that surprised.
The first person they look at would be the spouse.
We understand that's usually the way they do it.
But we began to wonder, had Nancy gotten so wrapped up in her own novels.
There are murders in all of the books.
That she was playing them out in real life? Follow Happily Never After, Dan and Nancy on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of Happily Never After, Dan and Nancy, early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.